righteous works, works that won't burn at the Bema Seat of Judgment, at the judgment seat for all Christians. They won't burn that are done as a response to grace and faith. And so I wrote down, works follow faith because of his righteousness, of his grace. If you look at some of the older movies, and you look at the king and the queen and back in the Shakespearean age, many times they'd say, by your grace, when they would leave. The king would say something, or the queen would say something, and they would say, by your grace, by your leave. It means the same thing. You know what that means? It means this work that you've given me to do, I will do because of your authority, your power, your position, and your person. That's what it means, by your grace. Grace basically is another word for what? Beauty. The beauty of the Lord in all of his holiness, and in his heaven, and in his throne room. There's songs that we sing about how beautiful the Lord is, the beauty of holiness. It means grace. So we either are living by his grace or living by our works. And this is really pretty easy to see. What's the curse of the law? How can you determine tonight if there are various curses at work in your life? Well, I'll just tell you, I'll give you a real easy one. And this affects most of us. It's called going around the same mountain. It's called continually struggling with the same thing. You do good for a week, you do good for a month, you do good for a while, and then you fall to the same thing. You know what you're under? You're under a curse. You know why? How I determine that? There's a curse over you because you have sought to gain victory over that thing by your works. And by listening to the words that maybe even I speak or CC speaks, and taking those words and deciding that you're going to do this thing. Well, you know, yeah, it's a funny thing, but you know, it's not very funny because it's a curse. You have any reoccurring sin that you can't get victory over, it's because you're under the curse of the law in that thing. And I'll tell you, the position is, I don't know if I don't have that, got it a little later on, but, okay, so what's the difference in taking a word that concerns your particular sin, taking that word, receiving it, and working that word to get free, doing it under the spirit of the law or doing it under the spirit of grace? See, there is a difference. But because of how we were raised, see, I think that all of you who grew up in church, and all of you, how many of you have had a pretty fair church history or church background? Probably, keep your hand up. You wouldn't say you do? Lori? Okay. I say, keep your hand up. Look around. It's almost every one of us. You had a church background. In the Marine Corps, you had a church background.
Well, the Marines, I call it a church background.
You served the church. You went to church. You served the church. You helped build the church.
Okay,
you don't see it.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Church,
so. I didn't say grow up. I said church background.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's
right.
The reason I say that, I'm saying that is because if you were involved in a church, you were involved in a religious system. I'll ask you this. How many here that went to a church, that church had certain rules and certain things, membership, whatever, okay? Everybody. Okay? Now, what is that? That's legalism. Okay, you tell me. Could somebody tell me what the rules and regulations of this ministry to you are? Yeah, there's basically only one admonition that comes from this ministry, and it's not a law. It's lose your life to find it. Judge your own heart. In other words, have a relationship with Jesus. That's our deal, okay? Now, you know what? You can turn that into a law, too. But and many of you have.
Yeah, because
it's what you came from. So you're just changing, don't smoke, don't drink, don't cuss, whatever, to, you know, judge your heart and, you know, these things.
You didn't throw away the filing cabinet.
Yeah.
The old filing cabinet.
So how do I break this curse? How do you, because you don't even think about what you do. I mean, you take the word in, you receive it, you write it down, you pray about it, and then you try to, there's various things you try to do. But then you get caught, and you find yourself get caught. The attitude comes out. The bitch comes out, the angry man comes out, the fear comes out, the lying comes out, the control comes out. Am I talking to the right group here?
Yes.
Isn't that kind of, a guy came to the ministry once, and he said, he was leaving the ministry. He said, well, I look at it like this. He says, this has been my dojo. You've been my sensei. I don't like the way I treat my wife. Therefore, it's your fault. And he left the ministry. Well, now, you know what? That's a pretty good evaluation. He comes to our ministry. He submits to the spirit of authority in the ministry. And he is abusive to his wife. Now, what I would say is, if that's new behavior, then I better look at something in the ministry, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is a guy that beat his wife before he came. He beat other women before he came. He beat up other men before he came. He's a 10-degree black belt and all this stuff. I mean, you know, he was in adultery before he came. So, I mean, it had nothing to do with us. He was a flash in the pan. He was with the ministry for maybe 6 weeks. That was it. Yeah. So. The difference, let me just tell you this. The difference between a self-righteous work and a work that is a result and a response to faith and grace. A work that's in and under grace. In and under faith. Instead of in and under self-righteousness in and under our own strength, in and under our own reasoning of the mind. The difference between the two is the intent of your heart. It's your, and I'm going to take it a step deeper. It's the inspiration of your heart. It's your inspiration in why you are attempting to change. And you know, most Christians, their inspiration to change is, anybody want to suggest a motive for change in a lot of Christians? Anybody want to? Maybe. Yeah. Feel good about yourself. And so that you can sit amongst the saints and have a position and not be spoken to and not really be found out, in a sense. Or in a good sense, you're working at it so this thing about you that everybody doesn't like will be put away because you really don't like it. Would you say that's true in a sense? In a sense, when it's exposed and the torment it puts you through, you'd really like to get rid of it. In one side of it, you'd like to get rid of it, but in another side, it feeds you in some way. It comes to your aid in some way. It defends you in some way. It gives you power in some way. Would you agree? So really what we have is we have a manifestation of intent. And the intent is not a passion to be free. It's a more or less a passion to keep it back where it doesn't affect others, but where you can feel secure. Well, right, that's what it is. It's managing your demons. Okay, so you're at 1 Peter chapter 1. And Derek will make a statement about holiness. And he kind of equates holiness with righteousness. And I want to show you, and I think Derek, it just that, I don't think it was so much that he was in error. I think it's just nothing that he dissected at the time. He was trying to present righteousness. But if you look at verse 13, well, first of all, look at verse 15, the verse everybody loves. But he which hath called you is holy, as he which has called you is holy, be ye holy in all manner of conduct. Because it is written, be ye holy, for I am holy. Everybody loves that verse, right? That's a verse that you really don't want to read, isn't it? If you're truthful. Anybody ever have a hard time reading that? Okay. I did too. Notice, if holiness is righteousness, why doesn't he say it? He never says, be ye righteous. He says, be ye holy. What is the difference? Well, we'll go up and look at verse 13. What are you supposed to do with the grace? Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, hope. What's the seed of hope? Faith? It's hope. Hope, be in hope. Be in hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at what? No spirit of revelation, you know, no grace. You have got to have, and what is revelation? It's inspiration. Revelation is what happens when you are inspirited by the Holy Ghost. Inspired. There's not a lot of inspiration among you. In the Word, with the Word, Sometimes you'll share some things which are good, but you're not inspired. You don't have the passion you should have talking about what you're talking about. Do you know why? There's something missing. Love's missing. Faith works by love. And Derek will say it. The bottom line is love. And I said it before, you can do nothing against love. The problem with us is we love ourselves. And that's for all of us. We love ourselves. And that's why it says in the last days, the love of many will wax cold. Because, and that's what's going on in this world. We got people blowing men, women, children, kids, dogs, cats. I mean, they don't care. There is no distinction, no discrimination among the terrorists. They'll blow up your kid just as fast as they'll blow up your grandpa. They don't care. There's no love. Kill a man as they would a beast, it talks about in the scriptures. There's absolutely no feeling and no love. And what that does is that influences us to put up our wall. And we're not free. We're not free when we're not in love. When we're not in love, we're not in and under grace. We're not in and under faith. Therefore, the only thing that we're in and under is the spirit of our own mind, and our own will, and our own decisions, and our own strength to do religious works. Does that make sense? So, he says, be holy. Twice, it doesn't say be righteous. So, we're to gird up our minds, be sober, be in hope for grace. What is grace? Somebody will say, unmerited favor. What a shallow definition. Grace is the very essence, the very nature, the very fragrance of His presence. Grace is the presence and fragrance and person, aroma of Jesus. That's what grace is. And when that grace comes upon us, we can jump over a mountain. We can raise the dead. We can get our dead bodies off the couch. I mean, we'll go and do anything when the fragrance and presence and person of His grace, when we feel that, there is nothing like it. Everyone here, to one degree or another, has felt that in your life. Where did it go? And why are you not willing to shed your grave clothes and your works of religion and your pity and all the things that happened to you when you were little or when you were big or yesterday? Why can't you discard that? Leave it be because of His grace and because of His presence and person, His aroma, pleasing Him. How come we can't do that? Because we love ourselves. And we are in religion. It's the only reason. There is no other reason. Well, you see, Brother Gene, I had this happen and that happened and I this and that. Oh, then God's grace, His presence, His power, His spirit, His person doesn't work for you. Works for everybody else, not for you. No, it works for everybody. It works for everything. Can you show me one place in the New Testament? One person. Just show me one. All I need is one. Actually, I need two. Because I need two to set a precedent. But one will be enough. Show me one person that the presence of Jesus didn't heal. Just one. Was there one person he prayed for that didn't get healed? Didn't get delivered? One? Not one. Did he ever say to any person that was dead, rise, and they didn't rise? 100% here. 100%. So it says, hope to the end. Whoa. Hope you have that underlined. Verse 13, 1 Peter 1, chapter 1. Be sober and hope to the end for grace that, by the way, will come to you at the revelation of his presence. As obedient children. Uh-oh. You stuck that word in there, obedient. Now that just tilts a lot of you if you think about it. Because that talks about works. Right?
Yeah.
What do you think obedient means here? It means keeping your heart in love. Not fashioning yourself according to your former lust. Not fashioning yourself according to your former lust. What's the devil's plan here? To always keep you thinking, Russ, that you were farmed out. Man, if he can just keep that thought in your mind, you're farmed out, you're rejected, you're a part-time son. Just part-time son. Once a week, son. And so goes the whole story with all of you. This word says, be obedient. Don't allow yourself to be fashioned according to your former life, your former lust, of your ignorance. But be holy. You know what that means? That means keep the integrity of your inspiration that comes from the revelation that gives you grace. Keep that. Keep your hearts in the love of God, it says in another place. Keep your hearts in the love of God.
That's why your ignorance has pulled my heart so far away.
Your ignorance holds no cause. For sorrow. Now he's going to talk to you about, he gives a great illustration about a roadmap. And about how we get instructed and then we go start on our journey and then we get lost and then we hear this voice say, can I help you?
Yeah.
And then we say, oh well, okay. So the Spirit leads us back onto the right road. And then he says, do you want me to stay with you? No, oh, no, I can do it for you. I got the map.
Yeah,
you know, I got the map.
Yeah.
One other thing. Turn to John, because I want to hit this before we see it. And I don't know, I don't think he goes into John 15, but go to John 15. One of the scriptures he uses is, I think in Romans, being dead to the law. Being dead to the law, married to another. But, I want to give you, if you're dead to the law, how can you know if you're really dead to the spirit of the law? The law. In other words, legalism. Self-righteousness. How do you know if you're dead to it? Okay? And how do you know if you're alive to the Spirit of grace? Real easy. By how you judge others. How do you think you judge others? You judge them by their works. Guilty. But, Gene, doesn't the scripture say every man will be judged according to his works? How does Jesus see works? Nobody will be judged according to their works. That's not what that means. They're going to be judged according to their inspiration. They're going to be judged according to the spirit behind the work. If your works are going to be judged, whether or not they were in him or not, is he judging the work or is he judging the spirit behind the work? What's he judging? He's judging whether the work was a work that was a response to grace in and under his power, his authority, his provision, his person and his presence. Whether we're functioning and we're working under his grace, by your leave, your majesty. By your grace, your majesty. I want you to go across the ocean, find a new land, find gold, bring it back. By your grace, by your leave. You see what he's saying?
Yeah.
He's saying, I will do what you've commanded me to do, and I'm able to do it because of your person, your power, your authority, your position, and your person. You see that? That's, so are our works a result, and what's the bottom line? Love. Do we do what we do because of love? Or do we do what we do because we need to do works for Jesus? And I feel so much better if I do something good today. If I serve somebody, if I help somebody, if I nice to somebody, if I don't get angry today, if I don't lie, if I don't, then I feel good. Or if I do, I feel good. But it has nothing to do with being inspired by love and being under and in grace that is shed abroad in our hearts because of the revelation of Jesus Christ. Because we got a revelation of the Lord being in something and we're there. We want to be there. I want to be involved because the Lord's opened my eyes. I see possibilities because he opened my eyes. Jump for Jesus was totally a work of grace. Totally. Not just because they didn't have the money or the equipment or the vehicles or nothing like that. It was a work of grace because he opened my eyes to the possibility, and he opened my eyes to where what he wanted done. And I was thrilled and excited and went 100% for it. So, you know what we call this? Being under grace because of the revelation of Jesus Christ? We call it union. And he'll talk a little bit about it. Being in union. You know what union is? It's the consummation of the marriage. Being in union with each other. Being in love. Well, I love her, but I'm not in love. I love him, but I'm not in love. What's wrong with that? The greatest thing is missing. Love, you know, love means a bunch of things to a bunch of people. But what the Lord's looking for is union. So let's look at John 15. Let's see what he says. Verse 2. Every branch in me. What's that? Union. And what proves union? Fruit. You can say you're in union, you're in agreement, you're in love. If there's no fruit, guess what? You're deceived. You're in an intellectual relationship. You're mentally ascending to each other. if there's no fruit. Their fruit is the proof of union. Okay? That is the proof positive of union, a true union, spiritual union, is fruit. You know what he's saying here, John 15? He's saying, if you're in me and I'm in you, you'll bear fruit. It's my Father's will that you have children. So all we need to do is ask ourselves, do we have children? Do we have spiritual children? Do we have disciples? And if we don't, then we need to just say, Lord, I'm missing something here. Everybody needs to be bearing fruit. Would you agree? Yeah. Verse 4, abide in me, and I in you, as a branch cannot bear fruit of itself. There's a big clue right there to self-righteousness. Yeah. Except it abide in the vine. You can, no more can you, except you abide in me. Verse 5, abide in me. And I in him, and the same bringeth forth much fruit. Without me you can do nothing. Verse 6, abide. If a man doesn't abide in me, he's cast away and burned in the fire. Verse 7, if you abide in me, and my works abide in you, ask what you will, and it'll be done. You'd think he's writing to a bunch of idiots. Excuse me. Right? What would you do if you were a thinking person, and in 7 verses, they said the same thing to you about 5 times? You'd say, excuse me, do you think I'm deaf here? Do you think I'm a dummy? Do you think I get it? I'm getting it. Please don't say it again. I get it. Would you think that? Would you say that? Well, guess what? We're all in that category because he's writing to all of us. Anyway. Yeah, I know. Need another tree limb across the forehead. Oh. The curse. I just want to touch on this real briefly. Turn to Jeremiah 17. I want you to turn to it because I want you to read it with me. Jeremiah 17. I'll just give you this and the scripture in Galatians, and then we'll turn this thing on. But Jeremiah 17, and we know this verse. Verse 5, thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusts in man, that makes flesh his arm, whose heart departs from the Lord. Now, this is why I wanted you to see this, because the key here is heart. Whose heart departs from the Lord. I'm gonna rephrase this. Cursed be the man that trusts in man, that makes man his strength, whose inspiration to please the Lord is transferred to men, who no longer are inspired to please the Lord in what they do. Their heart, the inspiration of their heart is no longer to please Jesus, it's to please man. And it doesn't really matter who that is. I mean, it can be to please me, it can be to please Cece, it can be to please your husband, your wife. When the inspiration of your heart is to please man, you fall under a curse. I'm not saying if you have the thought, you're instantly under a curse, okay? I'm saying if you lose, if your heart, if the inspiration of your heart is not to please the Lord, if you are more concerned about what people think, about what your boss thinks, about what anybody thinks, rather than the Lord, you're under a curse. That's what this says. Cursed be the man whose heart departs from pleasing the Lord, whose inspiration is no longer there to please the Lord and what they do. It's something else. It's for selfish gain. It's for peace, self-peace. It's for self-advancement. It's for whatever. Does that make sense? Okay, and then in Galatians, and you can put there next to that, Galatians 3:10, where it says, as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. This is written to Christians. I've had pastors say to me, oh no, Jesus was the curse. He died on the tree for us, and everybody that believes in him will not be under a curse. So Christians cannot be under a curse. I've had pastors tell me that. And I take them to Galatians, and I say, well, then what are you going to do with this? You need to throw this out, actually, the whole chapter. Because verse 10 says, as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. And by the way, who's he writing to? He's writing to the Galatian church. And by the way, the chapter starts off with who has bewitched you. Which Derek is going to explain that, and when he does, I'll probably stop it at that point because there's some things I want to say about that. Who has bewitched you that you should not obey the truth? Before whose eyes Jesus Christ has been evidently set forth and crucified among you? Serious stuff. I mean, this is very serious stuff. And the, really the question is this. Are you free? Are you really free? Are you, or do you continue to go around the mountain with the same things? Because if you do, you're under the curse of legalism. You cannot get free. You cannot really ever come to a godly freedom and peace and victory and liberty of spirit, soul, and body and enter into the fight. Not being affected, Satan can no longer throw those darts at you to get you in a melancholy state to where he takes you out of the battle for a day or two. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great if he couldn't take you out of the battle by giving you these reoccurring thoughts that condemn you, make you feel guilty, or cause you to accuse other people, especially those in authority, because in some way or somehow you're not being dealt with correctly, or somebody's abusing you, or you're not acknowledged for being great, or being nice, or being whatever. You know what I'm saying? Listen, you know, it used to really amaze Cece how I was seemingly unaffected by the persecution and the things people would say to me and would, you know, I mean, she really didn't get it. But, you know, either I was just indifferent, turned a deaf ear and said, oh, to hell with them, you know, had that attitude, or those darts couldn't penetrate me because I'm free. Because you know what? It's not about me. It's a great thing to recognize when the enemy's trying to take you off the track by making you feel guilty about something that you have gained victory in. The Lord hasn't. Anything in your life that you have gained victory over, guess what? It's coming down. It'll get shaken. Anything you have victory over that you gained your own victory in will come down, will be shaken, will be cause you to be removed from a situation because you're the one that gained the victory. The Lord didn't gain it for you. He who is free in all their deeds. Only that which can be shaken will be shaken, so that that which cannot be shaken will remain. And whatever cannot be shaken is those things, are those things that He has freed you from. Because once you're free, never again will He bring those things up to you to condemn you or to make you feel guilty. And when He does bring up the past, He brings it up so you can get further revelation. You never feel guilty. You never feel the sting of guilt or shame. Because you are free.